United Kingdom, the evening news program, a Christian program of news and views that many of you have come to know and trust through the years. I'm Elizabeth Cubitt Caverly, and my co-host Lou Caverly and I are very happy to be coming to you in these dog days of summer 2018. If we can all make it till fall, everything looks a little better then. But, you know, let's hope that some of the heat is put on some of those people in Washington, D.C., some of that government apparatus that doesn't really like you and me. And we do applaud the Representative Andy Harris from Maryland because he helped some people get back one of those terrible asset seizure deals. They got their things back. So, of course, the Activa, the George Soros group, Antifa group, rather, that type of people, they're here in Maryland, and they're always besieging conservative Representative Andy Harris's get-togethers with people out on location. And so there was like a brouhaha lately. Some man was sort of accusing him of being bellicose with him. And, of course, the representative's people said that this man had made threats against Andy Harris. So wherever these good people go, out to the heartland, you can be watching. We are seeing this, well, this Weatherman Part 2, these people who say they're Democrats, who say they're for the blue-collar workers, but they're really fomenting a lot of chaos. And we heard before that one of them said they want a coup. So with this kind of mindset, we know that Satan is back of it and that Satan would like to kill and destroy. We see that with the more than 60 million babies who have been slaughtered since 1973. And now we have this push for euthanasia. And I mentioned on this program before that the deep state is now trying to brainwash the ordinary American's minds, even going into the women's magazines, women who represent the heart of the home. There's no love like the love of a mother for her child. So about a year ago, I wrote to Woman's Day, to the editor there, and I said, as a longtime Woman's Day subscriber, I was distressed to find inside your beautiful Easter cover. Did you get that, listeners? Easter cover, the story of Nancy Volko's physician-assisted death. As, quote, the case against death with dignity, end of quote, pointed out, many religions and doctors strongly oppose the practice. Fear of coercing disabled or elderly to choose death is one possibility farther down a slippery slope. Hitler's T4 euthanasia plan began by killing mentally ill persons and disabled children. And if you think this isn't on the march, you just have to pick up People magazine now. And this was for July the 23rd. Why I helped my mother die. So this whole article goes into the story of Anastasia Saltopoulos's home outside Brussels. Now, we know that Brussels is the place where a lot of this can happen now, this euthanasia. And so this whole story tells about the mother and the daughter. And the daughter says that the mother wanted her to assist her to die. She had terminal she had Parkinson's disease and a recently diagnosed terminal brain tumor. And so they go on and on in this article. But you have to wonder, as they sit there with the grandchildren and they're reminiscing and they're probably looking back through scrapbooks and things, would you really like to have this on your conscience? If your mother asked you to help to do this, would you say yes? Or would you follow what God says in the Bible, that he gave us life and he is the one who decides when we die? And if there's a lot of suffering, I for one can tell you that my father looked at me one time and said, you have suffered more than a human being has a right to suffer. I have never had cancer, but I have had a lot of illness that was excruciating. The worst, perhaps, was the Lyme disease for about 18 months, in which I had a whole pile of magazines unread. At the end of that, I couldn't even concentrate. I couldn't look at a book. I couldn't look at a magazine. The pain, the anguish, the crippling, the back injury from my swelling legs that caused the back to go into spasms, sitting there screaming, the crippling, I couldn't raise my arm far enough to scratch my own head. All of this was a nightmare of feeling very sick. If you could feel just as sick, if you had eaten a whole lot of stuff that made you very, very sick, you had that for the 18 months, too, as you sat there. I could only sit in one chair in my home, and that was it. And I thought, gee, the therapist said, maybe we can get a recliner chair, and you can sleep at night. So we got this chair. I think it was either Sears or JCPenney delivered it, and I sat in it, and I was too crippled to use it, and I just silently wept. You see, in times like that, some of you are going through that with your families, with alcoholism, with lack of money, with abuse. You're going through things, and I can tell you right here that if you trust Jesus and you just never waver, you ask him to help you through it, you ask him to keep your faith, he will bring you to a better time. He positively will. So why I helped my mother die is this article in People magazine. You be alert. You're going to see more things like this probably in television programs too. The brainwashing. As the population ages, they're going to really want to get rid of all the old people they can. And we know that in Common Core, the curriculum, that somebody lately in a magazine said there's nothing much wrong with it. It's good. Yes, it's really good. One of the mental exercises that the kids had to do as part of their school curriculum was to decide which people were worth saving as a boat was going to sink into the ocean. Lou has an article which now will have an update. The situation that was in California in 2016. Lou?
From naturalnews.com, L. J. Devon, staff writer. In medical systems around the world, the hunt for viable, transplantable organs is on. The knowledgeable Jan Bowen of the Maastricht University Medical Center points this out in two separate papers published this year in the American Journal of Transplantation and in the Journal of Medical Ethics. He suggested that the more, quote-unquote, normalized euthanasia becomes, the more the boundaries will be pushed for expanding organ harvesting. In Belgium, euthanasia rates have skyrocketed since it became legal in 2002. More and more people complying to be euthanized are opting to have their organs donated. Doctors are beginning to pressure patients into euthanasia, requesting that their viable organs be donated. Family members may pressure a loved one to follow through with euthanasia if their quality of life is determined to never be the same. Bowen writes about the worrisome state of euthanasia today and how the hunt for viable organs is pressing patients to end their lives. Quote, the patient needs to be hospitalized when the physician administers the euthanasia drugs, facilitating optimal organ recovery and optimizing transplantation success of these organs. The patient's relatives are informed that they should say goodbye to their beloved person before the euthanasia drugs are being administered, since the time between death and organ donation should be minimized. More important, after the physician has determined death, the profitable patient has to be transported to the operating room immediately, unquote.
Back of all of this, we have this agenda that you can see down in Elberton, Georgia, on the Georgia Guidestones. One of the goals of the people who want the global government is to maintain the Earth's population in a balance of 500 million, when maybe we have 6 billion on the planet. That is going to mean getting rid of a heck of a lot of people. A lot of people admire Oprah Winfrey. She had a very popular television program, but not too many people know that she has met with people like Bill Gates and the other euthanasia eugenics crew who want a mass depopulation. You see, some people are worth more than others in the New World Order, but she spoke out lately. She was talking to British Vogue magazine. I Googled myself the other day for the first time. I am so impressed with myself. What a little world she must have. But as we progress, you see, we're getting closer and closer to something. We are getting close to what Christians refer to as the mark of the beast. And this is artificial intelligence. Now, you're going to see that our worries about euthanasia coming in, along with the abortion of these little babies, all of this is probably going to play a part in the ultimate climax of artificial intelligence. You see, we think that it's going to be an excuse to murder the people. It'll be a trick. Just as we think that UFOs and all of the shining lights, the satanic things, the so-called abductions, all of this, it's connected with the New World Order, and it isn't what it appears to be. It is a satanic deception. There are definitely demons or devils, whichever you want to call it. Some people have a big thing there in which they distinguish between the two. At any rate, what we mean is Satan's helpers here on earth, who are constantly tempting people, harming people, opposing Christians. We believe that all of these different things are going to play deceptive roles. We have the Jesuit connection. We know that certain people believe that the Roman Catholic Church, with all its emphasis on astronomy and whether there are other people in the universe, something will be a trick, probably. There'll be a day of a great thing, maybe with a hologram, a deceptive Jesus, something. All of these things are not too far down the road because we're moving closer to the cashless society, and we are getting into more of the artificial intelligence. Just as a little introduction, Jan Markell, who helped Holocaust survivor Anita Dettman write her wonderful book, Trapped in Hitler's Hell, which is available at lighthousetrails.com. Jan Markell, who has a radio program, a very large radio program, wrote an article in Hope for the World Update, Gary Kaw's publication for spring of 2018, and she asked this question.
Will AI rule the world? The first troubling headline I saw stated, quote, ex-Google executive Anthony Lewandowski is founding a church where people worship an artificial intelligence god, unquote. The second headline read, why humans will happily follow a robot, messiah. I started watching videos online of robots who look human and who, quote-unquote, think. They answer questions and seem to process real thoughts. Developers of these robots say that someday they will solve society's problems. Such men also believe that it is possible for artificial intelligence to be a billion times smarter than humans. Try to process that. Various leaders in the field of AI, have made some of the following statements. The human era could be ending, and machines will take over. He who develops AI rules the world. We aren't going to be able to control it. We are summoning up demons. We are playing with fire. This is one of the dumbest things we can do. Soon, robots will walk among us. They will play with us, teach us, and they will truly be our friends. AI will be smarter than humans and will become a god. AI could become the worst event in the history of civilization. In the end, the machines will win. Maybe this new religion isn't the promise of paradise after all. Some promoting AI are evangelists, and some are for a new promised land. But some of the very movers and shakers of the artificial intelligence industry are sounding serious warnings. This is really not the wave of the future. It is all being employed now. Outfits like Google have every bit of information on us they need. Address, email, occupation, history, photos, our family, our interests, our searches. Simply stated, they have all our vitals. So how will this play into Antichrist's agenda? Will this manage all buying and selling? We want tech companies to work for us, but we end up fitting into their plans and purposes. Dare I say, we are almost their useful idiots. We're all aware of the biblical prophecy found in Daniel 12:4 that knowledge will increase in the last days. But machines smarter than people? Surely God would never allow that to happen. He created mankind in his image, and he didn't create us to be superseded by computer chips. But that is not stopping man from trying. In 1948, there was a milestone event as it concerns signs of the times. That was the rebirth of Israel 70 years ago. Are we in the generation of a more current sign that could involve end-time technology, the image of the beast, mark of the beast, etc.? Could this wave of technology be as relevant as the stirring of the dry bones? We look at the events of 1948 in a rearview mirror. Technology is a 21st century fulfillment. Viewing one now famous robot, Sophia, is a bit unnerving. YouTube loves to feature her and has introduced her to millions. She is attractive, clothed, looks you in the eye, and answers your questions. She can be your friend, companion, problem solver, and perhaps someday, your spouse. At the very least, she will run the errands and put away your groceries. In the wrong hands, she will be dangerous. Young people are particularly drawn to artificial intelligence. Some will tell you that they can get an answer more quickly from Google or Alexa than they can from God. Who needs God in an age of artificial intelligence? Who needs an invisible God? And Google or Alexa may tell you what you want to hear in Technicolor, 3D, and instantaneously. Don't brush this off as silliness. It's our world today. Welcome to the brave new world.
And in this brave new world, we have leaders like Rodrigo, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Duterte, president of the Philippines. And he was dismissing the biblical creation story in a speech on June the 22nd. And apparently the church leaders in that predominantly Catholic church country got very upset. But these were his words. Who is this stupid God? Well, this stupid God was able to create all of us and all of the animals. And there was a very precious animal, Coco the gorilla, who knew sign language, and Coco died at age 46. And we had an AP article from Friday, June the 22nd. And I personally believe that animals are much more intelligent than we know. We've read stories about elephants that wept in grief when others died. God has put a little soul in them, too. I am sure of that. I remember one time when I went home to Pennsylvania, and I did not know that I had lupus yet, but something had happened where I was just lying on the sofa, sort of gasping for my breath. And my mother, who wasn't always characteristically sympathetic in words, said, "What in the world is wrong with you?" And at that very moment, my dad's prize dog, Hines, moved right over and guarded me. You know, he just sat right there looking at me so sympathetically. There are mysteries that we don't understand. And this wonderful animal, this Coco, they began to teach Coco sign language. And in 2004, AP says, Coco used American Sign Language to communicate that her mouth hurt and used a pain scale of 1 to 10 to show how badly it hurt. And at the same time, they told about how she really loved this little kitten. Somebody gave her a kitten, and she called it All Ball, A-L-L-B-A-L-L. All Ball was the name of the first of several kittens Coco raised into cathood. She chose the gray and white kitten from a litter for her birthday in 1984, according to a 1985 Los Angeles Times article. The cat was a Manx and looked like a ball. Coco likes to rhyme words in sign language, Ron Kahn said, a biologist with the foundation. Well, she was quite a legend in her time, and we have to see there that in her grief after the kitten was gone, she did show some human attributes, some attributes that seem to be missing from these people who want to euthanize their relatives, who want to stick their relatives into nursing homes. You know, we are living in a time that is getting much more vulgar, the language everybody is using. We are living in a time that is getting more vicious all the time. Think of the attack on Sarah Huckabee Sanders' family at the restaurant, and she has now made the comment that she thinks she's the first press secretary in the history of the United States that had to have a Secret Service detail put on her. Are we there? Do we see? All of this is going to lead to something a lot worse. Let's get the primer on transhumanism, again from Gary Cause Hope for the World Update, summer 2018, and it's connected with a very important article by Carl Teichrib, Transhumanism and Techno-Religiosity. But, Lou, let's get these important points about the transhumanism, what it is.
Transhumanism is the idea that mankind will, through science and technology, direct our own evolution and exceed present human limitation. Transhumanism hopes in a near utopian future wherein our physical and cognitive abilities will be enhanced, aging is slowed or eliminated altogether, and death itself is defeated through technical means, possibly by uploading our consciousness into a non-human carrier.
And there, we have to interrupt. Did you hear that? We will be putting things from our brains in with the computer clouds and all of this together. Now, here's the point at which I believe that deception will occur, that people are hidden away in the labs and they're going to be murdered, and they're going to then claim that, oh, it was just a great blessing. We got everything that remained of George Perkins. It's now in the cloud. You see, it'll be an excuse for the mass depopulation. Just the way the Germans were told, I think, when the T4, is it T4, Lou? I think program began. They took away some of the retarded people. They took away children with Down syndrome. We heard Anita Dittman talk about the Germans who were not Jews. If they had a Down syndrome child, they did not let that child out on the street. They knew it would disappear. But you see, the stories that came back to the parents were that they were really happy in these special camps for them, and they just caught the flu and they passed away when, of course, they were annihilated. So this thing with this artificial intelligence, this downloading, this is the strangest thing you can ever imagine, isn't it? It's bizarre. It's horrible. It's just horrendous that they would take part of your real brain and download it, and then that whatever's left of that would supposedly be a living superior entity. It's a kind of a science fiction murder in a horrible sense. It's a horror movie, isn't it, Lou?
Most certainly is. If anyone has seen the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, you know what it's like when a computer takes over. At first, the computer is guiding the ship. Everything's going beautifully. But then suddenly the computer gets its own impressions of what it wants to do. And things begin to go wrong.
And even if that's not possible, that's a movie, it is possible, you see, for a totalitarian state to murder people and then make the lie that the computer is superior, when we know that it is not ever going to be superior to man's soul as God created it. Let's pick up the rest of the primer on transhumanism.
We will become more than human, transitioning into post-human beings. Transhumanists point to a number of current and emerging technologies as indicators of our potential post-human future. Artificial intelligence, brain-computer interfacing, chip implants, simulated worlds and virtual reality, gene editing, cryonics, that is, preservation of the dead through deep freezing in anticipation of future revival, man-machine interfacing, cyborg upgrades, exoskeletons, advanced robotics, nanotechnology and molecular manipulation, smart drugs. Ultimately, transhumanism is a pseudo-religious philosophy requiring faith in humanity, specifically in our ability to save ourselves in order to usher in heaven on earth.
It is a pseudo-philosophy, and we think it's a cover-up for the desire to murder the middle classes, the, quote, deplorables, the people they don't want. That's what Satan's plan is, whether or not men really realize that yet. The early people with Hitler never realized probably his intent to go so far with the murder factories. And when we think about this one little term here, the chips, how about that? We know what that is, don't we? The chip implants, there are some in the military already. And we remember the reporting on InfoWars that Aaron Rousseau, before he died of cancer, the Patriot, talked with his friend Nick Rockefeller. And Nick Rockefeller told him that the goal was to get a brain chip into every human being on the planet. Well, all these things are going to fit together in an ominous way, we're certain. Let's get into it a little more deeply now, into this article, Transhumanism and Techno-Religiosity, and Lou and I will bring you this article by Carl Teichrib in Hope for the World Update, Summer 2018. There's always a lot of good stuff, good reading material in Gary Kaw's newsletter, and it costs about $50 a year. I believe it is $50. And if you decide to get it, you can write to Hope for the World. You just make your check out to that. Post Office Box 899, Noblesville, capital N-O-B-L-E-S-V-I-L-L-E, Indiana, 4606. And again, that's Hope for the World, P.O. Box 899, Noblesville, Indiana, 46061. And here is what Carl Teichrib says, and there's an editor's note. The following is an excerpt from Carl's book, Game of Gods, The Temple of Man in the Age of Reenchantment, due to be released this summer. In this section on transhumanism, the idea that humanity can evolve through science and technology, we see how these three religiously based movements have accepted the idea of human perfection through technology. Modern transhumanism has resurrected a marginalized philosophical religion, birthed a trans religion, and energized a subset of the Mormon faith. For transhumanists in Russia, the ideas of Nikolai Fedorov and cosmism have been renewed. Fedorov, who died in 1903, was a quiet librarian who advocated a synthesized philosophy constructed from Russian orthodoxy and technical progress. Looking upon the resurrection of Jesus Christ as an example to follow, Fedorov held that God intended humanity to engage in self-resurrection. In other words, if Jesus could rise from the dead, then mankind must find a technical way to likewise achieve this eminent goal. Given enough time, everyone from the past, present, and future would be raised to immortality through the spiritual application of technology. David F. Noble summarizes Fedorov's thoughts. Fedorov combined the ideals of Russian orthodoxy, the Russian aristocracy, and the Russian peasant commune into a doctrine of what he called the common task. The unification of all humanity and the, quote, removal of all the obstacles that prevented the evolution of man's humanity toward its last stage, the stage of self-creation, immortality, and godlikeness. This transformation, which entailed the reconstitution of the bodies of past humans, demanded mankind's complete mastery and control over the universe, including space. Early Russian cosmos also incorporated theosophical and occult ideas, perennial philosophy and Gnostic approaches, self-organizing complexity and chaos theory, Russian cultural sentiments and mystical science, quote, higher magic partnered to higher mathematics, end of quote. While Fedorov discouraged some of the esoteric teachings of his contemporary futurists, the cosmos worldview opened wide the doors of philosophical imagination. Cosmism also fit within the Russian tendency for totalitarian solutions. In his book, The Russian Cosmos, George M. Young explained that it placed the, quote, good of the whole community above the freedom of the individual to go his or her own independent way. We have to stop there a minute on this. Can we see that the beginning of this movement there under Nikolai Fedorov and the cosmos was influenced strongly by Madame Helena Blavatsky's theosophy, those teachings. And we know that in those teachings, they represent the New Age view that man is divine and that certain categories of people would have to be destroyed because they won't evolve when the time comes. Those people, according to Madame Blavatsky, were Christians, Bible-believing Christians, and Jewish people. You see, people of the book. So, again, we have this satanic lie, Satan who was dumped out of heaven, that he's going to arise and he will be God. He will be God. So that we have this growing kind of antithesis to Bible-believing Christians' views. We see it with the heads of the Silicon Valley, the big corporations. This kind of an arrogance, this kind of a rebuilding of the Tower of Babel. And back to this article, Konstantin Suivkovsky, a friend and protege of Fedorov, believed that all matter consists of life, which flows from lower states to ever higher orders of being. He thought that as we climb the ladder of material existence, expanding into the universe and reaching the pinnacle of material development, we will finally break free of our physical bodies and move into an era of Gnostic-like spiritual perfection. And if you don't, I'm speaking here as Elizabeth Cavalry, if you don't believe this influence is still here, you'll hear it. You'll hear it on Alternative Patriot Radio. Sometimes you'll hear someone like David Icke come on and talk about the vibrations and so forth that we're limited by and how organized religion has crippled us and you know, we're divine beings. This is a kind of a hubris, and this is a very, very bad trap to fall into. I know I once believed in reincarnation. I once believed some of these ideas, and I was really a devotee of Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, who supposedly was a Christian, and a spirit guide would come into him, and then he would talk out all this so-called truth. And it wasn't until a couple years ago when I thought I would pick up some old Edgar Cayce books from somewhere, not any that I own anymore, but I would just kind of review to see what had really snookered me when I was a younger person. And there I found that one of these spirit messages was extolling the Bible, but it was saying the true model was that of Freemasonry. Huh? There were the secret societies. You see, the New Age is not anything really new. It really does go back to the Tower of Babel and to rebellion. Anytime people turn against God and think they are gods, we have this kind of idea. And that's what is at the basis here of transhumanism, that we are finally, according to this person, we were going to finally break free of our physical bodies and we would be perfect. Laboring in his homemade laboratory, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly. It's capital T-S-I-O-K-O-V-S-K-Y. He put his cosmist and scientific concepts to paper. His ideas were groundbreaking. Astronautic theory, multi-stage rockets and spaceflight, artificial gravity and space-based solar energy. He also designed space colonies that could sustain up to 100 people. Containers wherein the social elite would move upward while laborers worked for the collective good. Now, do we see right here? We see the Marxist idea. We see the idea of the elite of today, the global elite, that they're going to have just people at the top and just a few workers left at the bottom. Plato's idea there, you see. There might be a military class in there somewhere, too. But everybody below the elite will just be kind of hired workers, and there will be many fewer of them, as the Georgia Guidestones attest. So this thing was not just a scientific development here. You see, with all these space colonies and things that could benefit everybody, it had this esoteric anti-God religion, we would say. His technical papers formed an intellectual path that eventually culminated in the launching of Sputnik. Today, you can see a prominent statue of him, the world's father of modern rocketry and a Soviet hero, sitting under the 107-meter-tall monument to the conquerors of space in Moscow. Cosmism then and today looks to space for salvation. A cosmist contemporary of him worth noting is Vladimir Ivanovich Vernadsky. Certainly not a household name in the West, his thoughts have nevertheless soaked into our spiritual milieu and the transhuman project. Bernadsky's importance lies in his theory of the Earth evolving an intelligent biosphere. Others before him had similar ideas, and Chardin's belief in the new sphere, a consciously awakening planet, may have been formulated after attending a lecture by Bernadsky. The Russian, however, was able to press the hypothesis into a synergistic philosophy, matter has life. And there it's important to note that Teilhard de Chardin was mentioned, and he was a Roman Catholic priest, I believe. At one point, the church had disavowed him completely, but his idea was that this planet is a living being, and it will eventually evolve to perfection. And we can see where things like the belief in Mother Gaia and the belief that rocks and wolves and, well, I didn't want to choose wolves because I already said I think God put some soul into the animals. But let's say rocks and trees, all these are living, you see. It's a kind of a false kind of a pantheism. So all this is going on there, you see, with this so-called science. And this is preceding the modern transhumanism, guys. This is like the backbone for this satanic kind of idea. This theory is a satanic theory. George M. Young writes in this again, back to the article, he was one of the first scientists to emphasize that the exchange of matter leads to a basic unity of the planet. And again, they're speaking of Bernadsky, its human inhabitants, and the cosmos. Now, did we get that? This guy, Young, says that the other guy, Bernadsky, was talking about a unity of the planet, its human inhabitants, and the cosmos. So in other words, we're getting to another New Age idea that we are all little sparks of the divine, and we're eventually going to merge back, you see, into this one big soul. Now, I have a big problem with that as a Christian. Certain things happened after my own father's death, my devout Christian father, that make me really believe that my father's personality survived, that he truly is in heaven. I have strong reassurances of that, and I believe personally that each of us is looked upon, as God says, as a sparrow. He knows each one of us. He counts the hairs on our head. You look at the people around you. No two snowflakes are alike, are they? No. And it takes away the dignity and the worth of the individual if we go into this New Age philosophy, because then there is no worth of an individual. We're just a collective group that has to merge back into this so-called divine spark. And that's in a lot of religions. You see how unique it is to be an American patriot, too? You see, the worth of the individual is all. Here in America, our freedoms, our individual freedoms. Isn't this wonderful that we believe largely in this country yet in a Savior who cared about us individually, a God who cared so much that he gave up his only beloved Son to die on the cross as a substitute, you see, for our sins, so that God, perfect God, could look upon us and we could be taken to heaven. What a difference this is from what we're talking about here, these wrong ideas that delude mankind to put their faith in stuff like this. All things, according to this creed, share a unity of life. In expounding on Bernadsky's theory, Young contextualized it in a remarkably familiar way.
We are, in a very deep sense, related to all on our planet, animals, vegetables, and minerals, as well as to other human beings. And as the rational component of the biosphere, we have a responsibility, literally, to all. In light of this, we are all considered global citizens, and our allegiance must be to the Earth, and not just as an inanimate object, but personified as thinking matter. We could call this the image of Gaia, the living planet, or Mother Earth. Young writes, quote, "As inhabitants first and foremost of the cosmos and the planet, human beings owe allegiance to the biosphere more than to any other nation, ethnic entity, economic class, or system." Cosmism Today is Fashionable. In my 2013 interview with Dmitry Itzkov, the founder and host of the Global Future 2045 International Congress, he explained that Tsiolkovsky was, quote, definitely the person who inspired me, unquote. Specifically, it was Tsiolkovsky's vision of, quote, radiant mankind and this transformation from this material body to the energetic form of a human body. It is spiritual transformation, unquote. Dmitry, whose evolutionary mission began with an experience of spiritual transformation, invoked Tsiolkovsky's name and dream during his opening speech at the GF 2045. It was not the first or only time I would hear Tsiolkovsky mentioned. The cosmos goal of unlimited transhuman freedom, escaping the bonds of Earth, was also visible in the GF 2045 introductory video. The planet is on the brink of global collapse, and we must either choose a new dark age or a new paradigm in human evolution. A complete technological and social revolution is therefore required if man is to survive. BCI, that is brain-computer interfacing, artificial intelligence, and simulated worlds will point the way forward. And with this revolution will come a new ideology, ethics, psychology, and culture, and even a new metaphysics. By creating manageable matter, we will move our consciousness into an artificial carrier and upload our personalities into a series of nearly immortal avatars. Then we can reach for the universe and ascend to the stars. The new man, unencumbered by earth and living matter, will then be devoted to spiritual self-improvement. And that's in quotes. GF 2045 is certainly not the only example of cosmism with the transhumanist movement. Much of the community has, in broad or specific ways, adopted some elements of the Russian philosophy. Julio Prisco, a former analyst with the European Union Space Agency and past director of the World Transhumanist Association, is a modern-day apostle. I have personally spent time with Prisco while attending a conference of the Mormon Transhumanist Association. Our avatars have crossed paths in the virtual world of Second Life.
Gee, listeners, did you hear that? Did Lou make a mistake? I thought he said there was a Mormon connection. Now, of course, many people want to defend the Mormon religion as being a Christian religion, but we have to remember that it says that God was once a man and that men can become gods.
Prisco is devoted to the post-human cause and advocates a new cosmism. Quote, science and religion, spirituality and technology, engineering and science fiction, mind and matter, hacking religion, awakening technology, unquote. Ben Gritzel is another modern cosmist, noting that science requires faith as we look beyond the data points to seek a holistic future. Recognized for his brilliance in artificial intelligence, cognitive robotics, and perceptual psychology, Gitzel holds a Ph.D. in mathematics and is the author of A Cosmos Manifesto. His volume bridges science and psychedelics, technology and philosophy, Carl Jung's collective unconsciousness, and mathematics. In his discussion of the quote-unquote global brain, a subject he specializes in, Gitzel offers two possibilities. First, the merging of individuals with the collective intelligence.
And now do we see what I said earlier about the spiritual component? This is a parallel, you see. In so-called science, they're doing what the idea of the New Age religion people want, and that would be, again, taking away our individual selves and reducing us, our worth, to being just little sparks of the divine, hooking us right back in to this so-called one. And you'll hear that term a lot more as the modern Bibles continue, the modern Bible versions continue to rob Jesus Christ of his divinity. We're getting a generic one, the one, the one. That's going to be the Antichrist, you see. So when we think this is just science, what Lou is reading here, that we're going to have a global brain, It's much more ominous than that. And what will that mean? The global brain, will that mean those little secluded cubbyholes where they're murdering the people and then they're putting out the propaganda that they're merging parts of their brains into the cloud and they'll be immortal? Is it going to be things like that? We can know that the mark of the beast will come sometime too. People will not be able to buy or sell unless they get this chip. So we can know that we never, never, never want to take the mark of the beast.
And once again, Goetzel offers two possibilities concerning this subject, that is the global brain. First, the merging of individuals within the collective intelligence, quote, sacrificing much of the individuality we currently associate with being human, but gaining a feeling of oneness with a greater mind, unquote. Or the other possibility, a system that retains a certain level of individuality without complete immersion, quote, connecting to the global brain could be more like using the internet today, but an order of magnitude more pervasive, unquote. He also wrote, quote, assuming a free society, interacting with the global brain would be optional, but nearly everyone would take the option, just as so many other highly convenient, inexpensive technologies have been adopted by nearly all people given the chance, unquote. He is correct. Humanity will opt in. Transhumanism has also birthed a trans faith. In 2002, Martina Rothblatt officially launched the TerraSem movement, a self-described trans religion. TerraSem, meaning Earth Seed, incorporates teachings on technical immortality and mind uploading, prayers, rituals, and Kundalini yoga. It is a fusion of spirituality, visionary creativity, and a secular faith in technology. But what does it mean to be a trans religion? Gabriel Rothblatt, Martina's son and a TerraSem pastor, gave an explanation during the 2013 Mormon Transhumanist Association's annual conference. Quote, trans religion means transcending religion. It means encompassing all religions, essentially secularism, unquote. Core traits of the techno faith, Gabriel explained, are joyful immortality, unity and diversity, the self-fulfilling prophecy of creation, unquote. TerraSem central beliefs, life is purposeful, death is optional, God is technological, and the love is essential. Martina Rothblatt argues that classical religions will eventually conform to the technological extension of humanity. A special interest to the TerraSem founder is the religious acceptance of mind cloning by uploading massive amounts of personal information, creating what they call mind files. It is hoped that when some future technology comes along, these databases can be reconfigured into the, quote, conscious prostheses of ourselves, unquote.
Is a lot worse than the FISA court going into people's lives, isn't it, Lou?
Boy, it sure is. Rothblatt expects that this digital personality will then desire spirituality and trust that traditional religions will recognize the copied soul of the virtual human double as valid. Equating the soul to consciousness and then extrapolating the mind clone to the function of an organ, Martina writes, quote, no classical religion, or no classical view of religion, believes you transplant a soul when you transplant a heart, nor can you kill a soul by killing the body. Hence, the mind clone continues to radiate the soul of its person, whatever may have occurred to the associated body. Beautifully, this is consistent across eight. Mind cloning will be viewed as a medical technology analogous to organ transplants, a life-extending technology embraced by even the most classically minded adherents to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Important to the story is Rothblatt's personal life. Having been born as Martin in 1954, the global communication and satellite expert announced being transgendered at the age of 40. The following year, 1995, Rothblatt's revolutionary volume, the apartheid of sex argued for gender fluidity and transgenderism as a social norm. The apartheid of sex played a major role in promoting the concept of gender as a social construct. Labels of male and female are acts of injustice, as sex is a complex continuum, and creative expression is negated when we constrain sex and gender to binary roles. Gender, like humanity itself, would be trans in the spin cycle of social transition. In the 2011 edition of The Apartheid of Sex, retitled From Transgender to Transhuman, Rothblatt recounts the non-binary position, adding the following in the preface. Quote, in a similar fashion, I now see that it is also too constraining for there to be but two legal forms, human and non-human. There can be a limitless variation of forms from fully fleshed to purely software, with bodies and minds being made up of all degrees of electronic circuitry between.
Now, can we see, I'm interjecting again, that we've moved so far into the reprobate mind that in this so-called scientist's view, there's no difference between a living human being and things. You see, a computer is only a thing. And we don't see a strong link here between him becoming transgendered and this viewpoint. I have some sympathy for people who have become transgendered. I think that they have had a sickness, and they are to not be treated in a very ugly manner. I don't believe that it is good for our national security to have people who are transgendered in mass there working. Now, if something happens where someone was in the services and performing a wonderful role and then becomes troubled and becomes transgendered, that's a different thing. The person can leave the service. But I don't really think that I disagree with Trump's view on this, because we really want people not to be confused who are watching over our security. But I really do believe that we do not want to treat people who may have had this problem with transgenderism any differently than Jesus treated the woman who was going to be stoned. No, I think there's a big difference between people who may have been like Bruce Jenner here and those, shall we say, who are hyping the homosexual agenda and are going out and raping boys, the NAMBLA Association. That's a very big difference, I think. And I think in God's eyes, he looks at that too. I think there may be some very fine people who went through being transgendered. And in fact, I actually know a person who has admitted that may have been a confusion and a problem, and that the person had one parent who was alcoholic. But this person is saved. I have no doubt the person has given the life that is given to this person to Jesus Christ. And just as Lou and I are not flawless people, we've committed sins. Why should someone be pilloried if they have given their life to Jesus? I believe this is different from someone who is actively sodomizing people and sodomizing boys in NAMBLA. There's a really big difference here, and I've been struggling to understand this, and God is helping me to see it. We have to be careful. We can't be fanatical about anything, and we can't be so rigid that we frustrate the mercy and forgiveness of God. I didn't plan to say all this, but when we saw that this man had that as part of his background, I had to say this. Lou, let's pick this up.
And again, this is from the 2011 edition of The Apartheid of Sex, retitled From Transgender to Transhuman. Rothblatt states, to be transhuman, one has to be willing to accept that they have a unique personal identity beyond flesh or software, and that this unique personal identity cannot be happily expressed as either human or not. It requires a unique transhuman expression. Unquote.
Now, isn't this ridiculous that we have to hear a theory like this, that we're not even human, there is no such thing? But what about Mormonism? And let's look at this a little bit. I think right here we get into it. In the 2011 edition, this was added to the preface. And I say this is a crazy redefining of life itself. In a similar fashion, I now see that it is also too constraining for there to be but two legal forms, human and non-human. There can be limitless variations of forms, from fully fleshed to purely software, with bodies and minds being made up of all degrees of electronic circuitry between. To be transhuman, one has to be willing to accept that they have a unique personal identity beyond flesh or software, and that the unique personal identity cannot be happily expressed as either human or not. It requires a unique transhuman expression. Terrorism is obscure outside of the transhumanist community. However, to post-human thinkers and techno-utopians, this new secular religion is a beacon of enlightened progressivism. Transhumanism has also energized the creation of a Mormon-based organization, the Mormon Transhumanist Association, MTA. Unlike terrorism, the MTA is not a religion in itself, but a network to advocate transhuman goals with an unapologetic Mormon stance. Mormonism mandates transhumanism. That's a quote. In other words, rapidly advancing technologies point to a fulfillment of the Mormon teaching that man is to strive for exaltation, to become as God. Although the majority of the membership is Mormon, mainly affiliated with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it is not exclusive to Mormons. Atheists, agnostics, and progressive Christians are part of the demographics. Gabrielle Rothblatt has been a member of the MTA, Cosmist, Julio Prisco, an atheist transhumanist who adopted a religious position due to his MTA involvement, is a member. So they go on to talk about this MTA and that it has close to 800 members. Indeed, much of the recent transhuman shift from secular approaches to religious context has come through MTA input. The MTA itself has collaborated on a book, Parallels and Convergences, Mormon Thought and Engineering Vision. And Carl Tykrib says, I traveled to Salt Lake City in 2010 to attend the MTA conference. And he talked about the MTA president outlined his new God argument and Terrell Givens' connected mythology and the human divine struggle in his presentation. Fear and trembling at the Tower of Babel. Others talked of humans and spiritual entities locked in a struggle for scarce resources, that all life is interconnected in a quest for spiritual perfection, and that transhumanism should be a next-gen religion intent on unifying humanity. They go on in this... I'm looking because we're going to have to shorten some of this, I think. Carl Tykrib says when he got to this meeting, there was a spokesperson for Mormonism and transhumanism who shook his hand and said, you're brave to be here, because they knew he had evangelical beliefs. And he says about, in preparing for my talk, they invited him to actually talk there. So he did. I was struck by what took place at the cross. Jesus, hanging naked and scourged and beaten, was being publicly executed between two thieves. Consider the narrative from the Gospel of Luke. Then one of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, saying, if you are the Christ, save yourself and us. But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to Jesus, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said to him, assuredly, I say to you today, you will be with me in paradise. Note that Jesus did not tell the man he would be saved by doing good works. Nor did he say to the thief, find a technical or scientific solution to your problem of death. No, the problem requires none other than the author of life to directly intervene. The implication is clear. Pluses are not going to work. It cannot be Jesus Christ plus technology, plus politics, plus religious rights and obligations, plus. The pluses are never good enough. Redeemed in the position of Christ, a person is now spiritually aware and awake. This is not the new man of Marx or Lenin. The thief's soul was safe in the perfect position of the Redeemer. We hope you will tune in to hear us on WWCR. 4.840 megahertz Thursday evenings, 8 o'clock. God bless you. Good night.